everyone, and welcome to They're Playing Our Song, the podcast where your song becomes our song. I'm your host, Robert Perry Cruz, and with me is my very special guest, Brandon Kukowski-Schnell. Kukowski-Schnell. How are you, Brandon? I'm sorry.
I'm great, and I'm used to that, so don't feel bad.
You did really well.
If you know, for a first timer, this is very impressive.
Well, like we were talking about, I think this podcast probably has the longest last name quotient ever on the internet. Mm-hmm. So we're making some history right here. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, like if one of your kids marries one of my kids and they have four names strung together, like that would ought to be.
It'll be rough. It'll be rough. We have to keep them apart. We can't have that. That's too many last names. So tonight we're going to be talking about LL Cool J's Mama Said Knock You Out from his 1990 album of the same name, though that's not the version we'll be talking about. But before we get to that, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm not really anybody.
You're my special guest, Brandon. That's the high point of my life.
So I used to write about games back in the good old days when sites were more plentiful. I wrote Game Shark. I've written for The Escapist and G4 TV. I used to write at 2:45. I haven't done that for a while. But I also have had my own podcast, Jumping the Shark, which was the official Game Shark podcast when it first started 6 years ago. And now Game Shark as a site is no longer around, so it's just kind of us doing our own thing. We talk about games and occasionally movies and get irritated with each other about Pitch Perfect and other, you know, things like important things like that. So
I was wondering if it was the because I know you know the Game Shark site's not around, right. So I was wondering if it was related or just you just picked the name.
No, so it was originally the official Game Shark podcast, which is why we chose the name that we did, which was also just a little tongue in cheek thing for like, well, this isn't going to last and it's going to stink. We've already jumped the shark; it's right out of the game. And then you know when the economy kind of tanked, and a lot of outlets that had sites just because they were like, well, we should have a site, started closing up shop. And, you know, a lot of sites got consolidated under, you know, certain kind of publishing banners, so to speak. Game Shark was one of the ones to go. But, you know, we have always had a good time with the show. So we thought, well, we'll just kind of keep it going. And two of the founding members, myself and Todd Brackey, were still on the show. And then Holly Green, who writes for Pace now, and she's written all over the place. She's fantastic. She joined us about, I want to say it was a year, maybe a year and a half ago. So we're still grinding it out, you know.
Beautiful. It's always good. I love I play very, very few video games myself. I get them. I got the new Star Fox game in the mail today. How long will I play that this weekend? Oh, zero. Yeah. In the next year, probably zero. Yeah. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. So it's great to have a lot of options for shows out there, because then I get to live vicariously through. I know you did one on Quantum Break.
Well, I was going to, but unfortunately, and then Quantum Break. So if I can digress for a moment, I'll give you my
of course.
So we were gonna do a show, and then life got in the way. We ended up not doing the show, and I said, "Okay, cool. You know what? I'm gonna finish getting collectibles. I'll stream it. I'll record it. You know, and just that'll be like a mini show. Booted up the Xbox One, booted up Quantum Break, and the game, my save got corrupted. So,
That's the
back
worst.
In the mail. It went.
Oh, well.
So there's.
I was looking forward to that. I was like, oh, just listen to Brandon will do an episode that I don't have to play it, and I can pretend I played it. So, oh, well.
Sorry.
I might have to.
I'll try to talk about it next time, but between Ratchet and Clank, which is a million times better than Quantum Break, and Bravely Second, which is also considerably better than Quantum Break, I don't know if I'll give it any.
Okay. I was thinking of downloading Ratchet and Clank.
It's
so if I know I can listen to somebody talk about it instead of my playing it, I'll download
it's fantastic, just
to do my part.
I mean, this is like what they should do now instead of just making games look better. They should just – because everybody has all the money in the world, right? So
Exactly.
So.
As much as I kind of want to hear more about Ratchet and Clank, I suppose we should get on to music and talk about LL Cool J's Mama Said Knock You Out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you, when you said you wanted to do this song, I was surprised that you did not want to do, you know, the studio version, because most of the time people want to talk about the album version, which is what they've heard. So you specifically said, I want to talk about the live version, and that's from MTV Unplugged?
Yo MTV Raps Unplugged.
Was Yo MTV Raps Unplugged? There's a Yo MTV Raps Unplugged.
Absolutely. So Yo MTV Raps came out. Oh, geez, I want to say. I could probably look this up. It was like 87, 88, I want to say. It may have been later than that. Mm-hmm. And it immediately was like one of MTV – I think it was immediately MTV's highest rated show. Because, you know, you have to remember that this was like the late 80s, early 90s when rap was like really taking off. But it still hadn't kind of gotten to the point in pop culture where it is like right now. Like right now, if you go and you listen to a pop song on the radio, there's a pretty good chance at some point somebody's going to come and like spit a verse on it. Like you're going to hear a rapper in the middle of it. Like last year, I mean, Taylor Swift, she released a remix of Bad Love, which was basically a Kendrick Lamar song. Like it was just Kendrick Lamar, and then she sang the chorus. And it was a great song, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think rap is and hip hop has become such a big part of our culture now that it's kind of hard to remember a time when it wasn't like that. So when MTV came out with Yo MTV Raps, like to be able to see like rap videos on TV, because MTV had been so resistant to show rap up until that point. It really resonated with a lot of people. But then also, so they had MTV Unplugged, which was, you know, I mean, it was people doing stripped down versions of songs. And I mean, there were some really great appearances on MTV Unplugged, but the idea of doing like a Yo MTV Raps Unplugged was really kind of odd. And this, this particular, this episode, cause they've had more than one. This one aired in May of 91. So I that was my sophomore year. No, that was my freshman year of college. So that was the end of my freshman year of college. So I would have come home. And I was actually home when I saw it. And so kind of in hip hop history, so this is like 1991 and like rap was making some like really weird, not weird, but so we had just gone through like NWA had, they had put out Straight Outta Compton and they had actually broken up by this point, like Ice Cube had left the group. And so
They were that quick. I always thought they were around for at least a couple years.
Well, but they released Straight Outta Compton in 88 and Ice Cube had left. I mean, NWA themselves were still around, but they weren't like all of the original members still in the group. And so gangsta rap was really kind of like on the rise, so to speak. And this was before like, when this episode of MTV Raps MTV Unplugged came out, like sampling was still like, you didn't have to pay people if you sampled their songs. Like the court decision that basically said, hey, if you sample songs, you need to pay the owners, the rights owners. Like that hadn't come down yet.
I know Paul's Boutique that was I don't remember if it's Apocrypha, but the fact that they couldn't have produced that album nowadays because it would be too expensive for the samples.
It would have been incredibly cost prohibitive. Paul's Boutique and then Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, the De La Soul album was like three feet tall and rising, I think. Very, very sample heavy. And I mean and this song itself has like five or six samples on it. So this idea of having, you know, this very kind of technology dependent, sample heavy musical form in an unplugged setting, which was all about stripping down everything that wasn't needed in the song and just kind of playing kind of the bare bones of it, was like, well, how is that going to turn out?
I was very shocked when you said, no, I've got this live version. And then when I was listening, I'm like, that sounds like an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
That sounds like a piano. Because I know you sent me the YouTube clip as well, but I was just listening in the car and I was like, this is not at all the instrumentation I would expect for this song.
So the episode had Tribe Called Quest, I want to say De La Soul, LL Cool J. And I forget who else. I don't know if it was MC Light or I don't remember. MC Light. Yeah. And so, you know, the performances were kind of uneven up until that point. And so yeah. I honestly don't remember. I remember like bits and pieces of it, but I remember mm-hmm. like being in my the family room, the TV room in my the apartment my mom and I lived in, and mm-hmm. seeing LL Cool J. And the first thing I remember seeing, because Mama Said Knock You Out is like his second or third number, I think. And he was completely mm-hmm. drenched in sweat at this point. Like, just, and he had, his armpits were all white. And I was like, what is going on? Well, turns out, so right before he takes the stage, he told an intern that he needed deodorant. Like, he had forgotten deodorant. So this MTV intern, and this was at the time when, like, nobody was buying aerosol cans and, you know, the chlorofluorocarbons were going to burn a hole in the ozone and everything.
Oh, God, that's right. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The styrofoam containers that your McDLT mm-hmm. came in was going to trash the baby seals and whatever. So the intern goes to the drugstore around the corner and sees the spray deodorants and is like, well, I'm not going to do that because that's bad for the environment. So he buys a stick of deodorant, and he brings it back, and LL Cool J basically looks at him like, what the heck is this? Spins the dial, takes the whole stick out, breaks it in half, shoves one half up one underarm, the other half in the other underarm. And that's why, like, his pits are white for the performance of Mama Said Knock You Out. So I remember watching this and thinking, like, because I, you know, LL Cool J was on the radio, and Mama Said Knock You Out at that point had been, because that was the fourth single off of that album. So mm-hmm. the album came out in 90, I think, and so, but by the time Mama Said Knock You Out was released, it was 91. And it was a great mm-hmm. song. I mean, it is a fantastic song.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, well, this ought to be interesting. And man, I mean, just from the beginning that, you know, don't call it a comeback. Bam! And the band kicks in, you know, and then he's with energy. Bam! And then from there, it just kind of takes off. And I was like, mm-hmm. and I just remember sitting there going, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. What is happening? Because I'd listened to rap since, like, when I was in high school. One of my best friends, Ed, he had a cassette of Ice-T's Power. And we listened to that thing nonstop. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, part of it was because we were young and we were young men, young boys, and there was a song on it called LGBNAF, which stood for Let's Get Buck Naked and, you know, the last one. Well, when you have an album with that song on it, you're gonna play it all the time. And I mean, Ice-T, he swore and all that stuff. So we used to just drive around the streets of Albany, New York, and listen to Ice-T's Power. And then my freshman year in college, I actually had a rap radio show at 2 in the morning at the college radio station. Yeah, and we would just – this is me and this other guy. And we knew like a little bit about rap, but we didn't know. Mm-hmm. And we would just go and pick anything off the shelf. We were just like, oh, this looks cool. And we played Ice-T, EPMD, and Public Enemy, and we played Two Live Crew one time, Please Don't Bite It, which was a really bad song to play in the radio, even though it was 2 in the morning. So I mean, I knew rap music, and I wasn't, like, completely unfamiliar with it, and I really, you know, and I enjoyed it. But this was, like, nothing that I had ever seen before, because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody, like, completely and utterly owning a performance – I mean, LL Cool J, part of the reason why I like him so much is because, you know, his raps were so much about just the bragging, like just the old school kind of braggadocio style of rapping, like the same thing that Run DMC made popular, like Kool Moe Dee or Big Daddy Kane, like those mm-hmm. guys. Like, I mean, I N.W.A., you know, Straight Outta Compton is an amazing record, and I love gangster rap, and to this day, I'm much more of a kind of West Coast Dr. Dre, G-Funk guy. But those old school raps, you know, like, I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. You know what I mean? Like, those just, like, this is how awesome I am. Like, I love those rhymes. And so that...
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that style, just that, like, look how great I am. But it's very amusing, and it's certainly someone as charismatic as LL Cool J. It's like, oh, I agree.
Right.
I agree with everything you're saying.
Right,
there,
and
sir.
This is a song in which his mother is instructing him to render you unconscious. Like, I mean, Yeah, I mean, of course, Mama said so. But anyway, I mean, the band, and I mean, what's cool about this song is this performance. I don't know how much time they had to perform. I don't know how much what they decided to do, what they didn't decide to do, how familiar the band was with the material. But they, you know, when you listen to it, and I'm not a musician, I don't have a musical background. But I just feel like they're kind of just teetering on the edge of it, like maybe falling apart. Like there's just certain moments where things aren't entirely like kind of synced up. And I don't know if it's LL not used to playing with a band. I don't know if it's a band not used to playing with a rat. Like, I don't know. I mean, at one point, like in the middle of the song, they break into at the time it was the Black Crowes, but I know they took it from, it was Hard to Handle, which I know that's a cover, but it was like that, dun, 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 yeah. You know, like right in the middle of the song and you're like, what is that? But my favorite part of it, well, there's two parts. So my favorite part is there's a line in the middle when he goes, he says damage three times. Damage, damage, And so when he gets done with that, and the way that, like, the piano guy, like, he runs his fingers across the key, and then the band just comes right back in. It's that moment, like, where he's kind of carrying the song just with the intensity and the charisma in his voice. And so the band is kind of hanging back a little. But then when he's done with that, and they just kind of swell in, it's just an amazing, like, it's such a great moment in that song. And it's just then at the end, he goes back into the Hard to Handle, and then he has everybody sing Leave That Crack Alone, which, you know, that's a good idea. You should leave that crack alone.
It's a good message for the kids. Yeah.
I mean, it's such a weird performance because he knows he's with a band, so he has them kind of break into, you know, a song, like, not, you know, I mean, they're playing a song, but he has them, you know, do like a little musical bit. But the way he weaves it in, but I mean, he just completely owns that stage, and he owns that performance, and it just feels so like loose, but in a good way, like almost like you're almost a little scared, like, what's, you know, are they gonna miss something, and like, to me, like, you know, the best music, you know, the best rock music, rap music, whatever, is when that you have a little, like, you have a little bit of fear, and maybe it's just because what's he gonna say next, or what, I don't know, like to me, I always equate, like, the artists I like with the, like, they may not be comfortable. They try new things, and I think some of that, the trying new things, I mean, there's an inherent fear there that it could fail, it could all fall apart, you know, that type of thing. And I just love that about this particular performance. But the thing, if you get a chance, you should watch the video. And the reason being that there is a guy in the stands who is losing his mind over this show. And I love this guy. I'm assuming it's a guy just from the build. And the cameraman stationed behind him hated this guy because this guy was constantly on his feet. It's not even an arena. It's like a small theater.
Yeah, it's like a little theater in the round almost.
Yeah, so they pull back. You know, they kind of to do a wide shot, and this guy will not sit down. He is up and he is pumping his fist, and I'm like, that would be me. Like, there is no way I would be sitting down for this performance. And I mean, and they have to keep like switching. And I just love that guy. Like, he is so excited to be at that show and seeing that thing live. And I feel bad for the cameraman behind him, but, you know, whatever, he'll get over it.
Yeah. So, Brandon, are you a fan of the album cut itself? Because I know I listened
absolutely.
To, I watched the clip you sent, I listened to the song, then I listened to I watched the original music video, and I remember that, I remember the song itself being like really upbeat and powerful, but man, watching that live performance, and then listening to the album cut, felt a lot slower. I mean, I didn't get a metronome, but it didn't feel close to as energetic as that performance.
Yeah,
that,
I feel like the album cut is almost, I don't want to say it's a slow burn, but it's definitely more measured, I think would probably be the word I would use, than the live cut. Like, and I think that's part of the reason why I like the live cut. Like, a small sidebar. So, it was a few years ago. I don't remember when exactly. So I can't even remember the name of the game, but Def Jam came out with a rap game similar to like Rock Band and DJ Hero, in those games, right? Mm-hmm. And so – and it was actually a really good game. And so they would, it would have rap videos, and you would rap the song, right? And so you could also make your own video and post it, and the community would vote on it. And I got in a rap battle with another guy.
Oh, God, really?
Mama Said Knock You Out. I actually – hung the microphone, the one I'm using right now, from the ceiling tile in my basement, and I put on a brown hoodie to be like in the video, and I positioned my little rinky-dink Xbox 360 camera at an angle to get it so that it looked like LL Cool J with the, you know, the boxing mic coming down.
Yeah,
I know, right?
Did you win?
I think I did, actually. I think I did. I don't remember. It was early on. I think you could vote yourself up pretty significantly. So I'm not going to say that entered into the, but that totally entered into it. But yes, no, it is like I said, it's a faster, it's a more kind of energetic version of the studio version. And I think, you know, having the live band there, like all those different sounds, like you can really hear the piano player, you can hear the acoustic guitar, there's just a lot more. I mean, it's just a different kind of representation of the same thing. But, you know, the one thing I do like a little bit more about the studio version is that you can hear that a lot more in the studio version. And I like that because it's just like a constant, like even when he's not, like when his voice is still a little calmer, that's still kind of like lifting you up. Like it's like you're constantly getting pumped up over the course of the whole song with that little bit. And those vocals don't come through as well in the live version.
Yeah, I wasn't actually when I heard them doing the harmony or the background vocals, I couldn't quite tell if they were supposed to be doing that or if they just kind of gotten caught up and they're like, hey,
shut up. They were supposed to, but then they kept forgetting, and so then they'd come back and be like, all right, you know. And meanwhile, LL's like, what's happening? You know, like, I don't know what's going on.
I know you were talking about the piano player. That guy was crazy in that version, because I know if I were a piano player and it's like, all right, we're doing a live version of a rap song that has, you know, samples and it's got like a clear beat, I need you to do that on the piano.
Right.
I would be terrified. Like, how am I? What? And that's not how piano works. I don't.
Right.
But somehow it sells it. You know, I don't need the backing beat. I don't need any of that stuff. That piano is just carrying so much of the melody.
Like, whatever. Like, if you ever look at him in the video, he's kind of, you know, he's got like longer hair and glasses. He's got like a blue chambray shirt out, whatever. I mean, the piano player looks okay. You've got LL Cool J, who was not the only shirtless, sweaty guy on stage.
There's the guitarist, right? I thought that was his friend. He's like, we're not wearing shirts, everyone.
Like, they showed, like, the acoustic guitar player is wearing no shirt and what appears to be his pajama pants. He has long black hair. He's playing an acoustic guitar. He is glistening, but yet not, he is not like, and he was, and I mean, he's pretty like well built guy, but compared to LL Cool J, he looks like he needs to put on some weight. He's doing his thing, and then the bass player, he's looking all funky, whatever. And then you've got the piano player, who looked like he just, like, walked down the street from the middle school where he teaches music, you know, and he just is like, you know, just kind of, and he does kind of pick it up at the end. Like, he does get a little excited, but, you know, for the most part, he's just kind of like, do-do-do-do-do, you know, doing his thing. But it adds so much to that song. It's a really wild performance. I love it.
I like the drummer. I get the sense that he looks like maybe – I couldn't tell. He looks like he's wearing like an old army
vest.
He's got some sort of shell shock, but he's just rocking along with that. And that, I mean, he's got a – he can't stop. You know, there's no stopping that drum backing the whole way through. He's got to keep going.
I mean,
he seems to be having a good time.
Important. I mean, because, you know, that beat, like, you need a beat. I mean, rappers, they don't need a beat. Mm. They can freestyle it. They're good. They can – do it or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that backbone is so important. On a somewhat related note, If you ever get a chance, I don't know if you're a fan of Jay-Z or not, but they did an MTV Unplugged with Jay-Z, and the Roots did the Roots were the band. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely fantastic. Hands down, one of my my favorite albums I own is Jay-Z Unplugged. I mean, they have a guy who doing beatbox. I thought they had a DJ there, and I was like, and later on I was reading about it, and they're like, no, he's his beatbox. And I was like, no, he does not. That was, I mean, it wasn't just like the, you know, whatever, like normal beatboxing would. It's not like just like a beat. It's like he was doing all the sound effects and the scratch, you know. And I was, it's great. It is really, really good.
That does sound like something like Jay-Z would try very hard to do. Like, I can do like the album, but it's a live, unplugged version. It does seem like something up his alley,
Jay-Z,
right?
Jay-Z can do it. I mean, the man's amazing. Like, if you ever watch Fade to Black, which is the it was a documentary that they did on the release of the Black album and then his retirement, which are in quotes. Like, rappers retire like superheroes die. it sticks about as well. I mean, you have some people like Mace who actually retired and then became like a reverend or something. So, but anyway, they have a scene when he goes to record. He goes, I can't remember the name of the producer, but he goes to hear beats from this one producer, and the guys are like playing him these beats. And what's funny is the producer he's so hyped for all of his beats. Like, every beat is the best beat that was ever made. And he's just into all of them. And Jay is so not into them. Like, he's just like, whatever. And then they played the beat for Dirt on Your Shoulder, Dirt Off Your Shoulder. I can't remember if it's on or off. And it's this weird – it's a really weird beat. And Jay kind of gets this look in his face. He gets this look on his face like he smelled something, but yet he's also intrigued, like maybe the first time you ever drank a beer where you're like, well, this kind of tastes bad, but yet I feel like I should keep drinking it. he kind of has that look on his face, and so that's the one he decides to go. And he goes in the booth, and he just, like, does the whole song off the top of his head. And they said he didn't write anything down. He just goes in, and he just does it. It's amazing. I mean, the man's amazing. The man is – he can never record another thing again and still have a legacy that, like, most people are never going to come close to.
It's just I've never – I think, you know, rap in general – I mean, I'll like, try to rap to my kids or, like, rap to my wife. And I get about, like, one line in. If I'm, like, really on fire, I might get two or three sentences in. So it just blows my mind how there are, you know, any number – I mean, you know, that can just – take a beat or do it a cappella and just come up with like a little story that rhymes and that fits together so well. It's amazing. I mean, I don't know how whip smart you have to be to just be able to pick out the rhymes and still make sense and not just sort of, you know, I think it's probably why I like the old school or the golden age rap, because they're just sort of talking about whatever. And it's a lot of the same subject. I'm like, I could probably do that. I don't care how great I am for a couple more lines.
No, I mean, it's definitely. And then when you add into, just within that, like the different, like one of the things that is interesting to me anyway is just the difference between like just the kind of rhyming that was done when things started, where it was very much like, you know, the rhyme would be at the end of each line. So, you know, my name is Brandon. I'm here to say I rock everybody in the USA, whatever, something stupid like that. Yeah. And then now how in modern rhymes, it's like they like at some point in time, all the rules for rhyming just kind of went out the window, and you'd have like rhymes within within lines, like, but then you'd also be hitting, like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe. Like, I listen to a lot of Eminem, and he does that a lot, where it's like he'll carry certain sounds and certain rhymes within the line itself, and then end on one, and then come back so that the middle is the same as the middle before, like things like that. It's not just like, I mean, he subject matter aside, which is a hard thing to do with hip hop, but. I mean, his verbal wordplay skills are just amazing. Like, that's the type of stuff there's a lot of people. I mean, I couldn't put together a cogent rhyme about anything, but it's not just like, as you're saying, like being able to come up with the thoughts and the words and that type of thing, but then to have a distinct style is also just amazing to be able to, I mean, to put all that together, and then, you know, whether it takes you a week to do it You could give me a week. I mean, off the top of your head, yeah, that sounds impossible. You could give me a month and a stack of money, and I'd be like, yeah, I got nothing.
I like that I could come up with something kind of mediocre, like, oh, that's not good. But I guess we gave you all this money, so we might as well record it. But yeah, I couldn't come up with anything meaningful or that had any sort of double entendre or special expression. It would just sort of be like, I thought of these words. They all rhyme. It's about a car. I don't know. That's all I got.
I felt really good because my daughter got a Bazooka Joe gum wrapper, and it was like, you need to make a rap with these four words. And I actually did it. I was really proud of myself, and I was like, that's it. We're good.
Do you remember what it is? Remember your rap? Your rhyme?
Let me think. What were the words? Oh, the words were – okay, okay. No, the words were morning tea, sweet pea, home free – and whoopee.
Okay.
So let me remember, it was let's see. My rhyme's so strong, wake you up like morning tea. You're living in a jail cell while I'm living home free. Got you so jealous, skin green like a sweet pea. Your girl's at my house, have her saying whoopee, something like that.
Ooh, that's real good.
Yeah, that's me like there all day. Like it was literally, and I mean, and I'm not saying like I was doing other things. Like there was a considerable amount of brain cycles that went into that. And my wife was like, "You got to keep it PG." And I was like, "The word whoopee is in it. There's no way that's being used for sex."
Yeah, I am not. Joe, people knew what they were doing. They were
not buying whoopee pies. And so when I told her what it was, my wife was like, "Oh yeah, she will not understand that at all." Nice.
That's good. You get a couple more Bazooka Joe rappers, you got yourself an album. That's really impressive. You heard it here first, folks. World exclusive.
Yeah.
So going back real quick to LL Cool J, I know one of the things that I never understood until kind of getting ready for the show was the idea of the don't call it a comeback. Because I have no barometer for LL Cool J, because I knew he was a rapper. And then he was in movies and stuff, and I didn't know whether that don't call it a comeback had to do with the fact that he wasn't rapping anymore, that he wasn't selling as many albums as he used to.
This is just me thinking. So Walking with a Panther was the album that came out prior to Mama Said Knock You Out, and it had on it I'm Going Back to Cali, which is a great song. I'm trying to think what other ones. And, I mean, commercially it sold well. But I think the rap community didn't embrace it as much as his earlier stuff. Because, I mean, this was at a time when, like, pop rappers were really kind of coming up. So, you know, your Tone Lokes and Vanilla Ice, MC Hammer, those kind of guys. So, you know, you had rappers like Run DMC who – even though they had a lot of crossover appeal. And I mean, the reality is, you know, the rappers being able to get paid to be on pop songs, they don't happen without the work that guys like Run DMC and LL Cool J did to bring rap into pop music. But that being said, even though they were what you might consider popular rappers, I don't think you would consider them pop rap. But Tone Loc or who's the guy? Tone Loc was he was Wild Thing,
the guy that did
Funky Cole Medina. I forget his name. So,
but is that wasn't Tone Loc too?
Oh no, sorry. I'm thinking of Busta Move.
Oh, okay.
You've got it.
Oh, geez. I don't know who that is.
Anyway, so those guys are considered more like pop rappers, and I think that kind of pop rap itself was not – I mean, it's definitely not embraced by the rap community. I don't know if that is the same way now, but, I mean, there's definitely a difference between, like, Pitbull and Flo Rida, for example. And like Kendrick Lamar, like I mean, they're not on the same level. Nobody's ever going to even equate those two groups, like Kendrick Lamar, like ASAP Rocky, or those guys. Like they're not in the same group. But then you have a guy like Drake who, you know, he can be played on the pop radio stations, and then he also gets played on the rap stations. And so he's got some crossover ability, but you wouldn't consider Drake a pop rapper. This is the same. And I don't know if, like, Walking with a Panther, like the rap community was kind of thinking maybe like LL was kind of selling out because, you know, or being more commercial or what. So that's where I think Don't Call It a Comeback comes from, is just this notion that, hey, you got to remember too, like LL Cool J was a cat. He was 16 years old and he basically told his, I think he was living with his grandparents. He told his grandparents, like his granddad had bought him, spent some money, bought him turntables like that. He basically told them, I'm dropping out of high school because I'm going to be a rapper. And he would go to the record store. And so this was back when Russell Simmons and Rick Rubin were getting Def Jam off the ground. And Rick Rubin was running Def Jam, or his part of Def Jam anyway, out of his dorm at NYU. And he had produced a single or something, and he put his phone number. Can you imagine? Like, he put his phone number on the album. I don't remember if it was a single or what it was. And so LL Cool J, 16 years old, would go to the record stores and buy the rap albums, and he sees Rick Rubin's number on, and he sends him a demo and then proceeds to call him every single day and be like, did you play my demo yet? Did you play my demo yet? Did you play your demo yet? And so Ad Rock from Beastie Boys was friends with Rick Rubin. He used to hang out in his dorm room and listen to all these demo tapes. And he basically said Rick Rubin, like, you got to listen to this thing. And so Rick Rubin listened to it and then signed him. 16 years old. I mean, and so you're going to then, like, you're going to – whatever, diss a dude who's been in the game since he's 16, like, just because he just, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff bothers me. And I mean, we do that as Americans, and just pop culture is such a short memory that to you know, it's all about, well, what'd you do from, you know, what was the last thing that you did? You know, I think that Don't Call It a Comeback comes from kind of how he feels his last record was received. And this was him saying, you know, no, I haven't gone anywhere. Like, I'm still the same guy I used to be. And the reality is, I mean, there's some really, like, it's a really good album. Like there's some really good songs on it. I like it better. To me, it's my favorite album. I mean, like, his earlier stuff, like I'm Bad and, you know, Rock the Bells, that's, I mean, it's the,
yeah.
Right. I mean, those are good, but I think this was like, this is my favorite. And it's because it's such a strong album.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly the title track itself is, you know, I think most people who were at least, you know, alive or, you know, older than say like 10 or 11 when that song came out, I think everyone hears Don't Call It a Comeback and they know, oh yeah, I know that song. I mean, Mama Said Knock You Out, you know, I think that's a pretty, even if you don't know the song, like, people kind of get that refrain or they're able to get into it. They're like, oh yeah, I don't know. That's a song.
Yeah, I remember
it's a good
when
song.
I was student teaching, this would have been my senior year of college. So it was a few years after it came out. And, this physics class that I was teaching, there were these three girls in it, and, there was this one boy in it, and, you know, they were all friends, but there's times when he's trying to be cool. And, you know, I mean, he's a teenage boy and they're teenage girls and he's probably doing his best to impress them. And I don't know what happened, but at one point he said the word damage or something and they all started going, damage, oh, damage, oh, damage. And he was getting so irritated. And I was like, yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Absolutely. He's going to drop a bomb, you know. But I remember that just kind of laughing to myself. But yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I always forget, like, when he started doing, like, it was In the House, I think was the name of his TV show, and, you know, and then started acting, and he was in Deep Blue Sea.
He was the cook, right?
He was in SWAT with,
Colin. What's his face?
Didn't see it. Right now I'm seeing him as,
It's not Firth.
Dude, that's Mr. Darcy. No,
He's the guy from In Bruges, you know. I mean,
in the horrible Daredevil movie. He was the only thing good about the Daredevil movie. Colin.
This is going to be annoying. I know what he looks like. Oh, it'll come. I'm sure we'll one of us will scream it out at some point.
Barrel.
That's yes.
By the way, if you type Colin in Google, first Colin Hanks, Colin Farrell, Colin Powell, which I guess that's Colin Powell at that point. Yeah. Anyway. So this was like before he had kind of really gotten into the acting and all that stuff. But I always kind of mix up all those timelines too.
Yeah, they sort of, and some of those movies were pretty mediocre. So not no offense to him, he was always one of the most interesting things in any of the movies he was in because he had such a charisma about it.
I watch all the NCISs because in my heart I'm a 65-year-old man. And I love Los Angeles because, who cares about the other guy, Chris O'Donnell, whatever, he's Robin.
Oh, well, yeah, that's that guy. Yeah, I know, Batman and Robin, he doesn't deserve your attention.
But Linda Hunt is on NCIS Los Angeles. She is?
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know she was still doing those shows. What are they on, like
something
season 32
like that, yeah.
or something
if
now?
You,
like,
if you combine all the seasons of every NCIS show, it is the median age of NCIS fans.
I get, you know, it's a good time to be CBS when you've got, you know, more elderly people in the country than ever before.
They're like, we don't know anything about streaming. We only know this box our grandson set up for us. We'll watch whatever you put on it.
My cable box keeps flashing 12. Help me.
Sit down and watch Criminal Minds. It'll take your mind off it. Anyway.
And there's just violent shows. I always think they're going to be so milquetoast and boring. And it's like, oh, man, we've got this multiple child murder evisceration. Like, what old person wants to watch this?
They had a commercial because Gary Sinise is on a show. It's called like Criminal Minds Beyond Borders or something. And I don't know what it's about. But my wife was like, which one is Criminal Minds? And I was like, Criminal Minds is the show that when we're watching football at 2 o'clock on a Sunday, they have a commercial and they're like, oh, he drills their eyes out and pours battery acid in their face. And we're like, what? What's happening? She's like, oh, right, that one.
They're counting on the audience kind of tuning in and out. They can't really, what? I can't follow the plot. Is that guy the murderer? Yeah. Who's the murderer? I liked Person of Interest on CBS myself, but then we cut cable, and I realized CBS has no means of accessing the internet, so that was the end of
CBS
that.
CBS is going to come up with their own streaming service and run things that, like, they're going to do, like, the $8 a pop type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Are they really?
Yeah.
Man, I can't imagine most of the people who watch CBS would understand how to access CBS.
I know,
it's
going
to
be interesting. I tell you what.
So, do you think this song would have worked had the album itself been the big flop, or if everyone had hated it? Because it's almost self-fulfilling. You know, the song has to be, or the album has to be good for everyone to be like, yeah, that's right, LL, you know, it's not a comeback, you're the greatest, and you're still doing it. But if it had been a big bomb, wouldn't it have just been the most embarrassing song ever? Like, don't call it a comeback, because your album didn't sell any LL Cool J. Ooh,
yeah,
burn.
I mean, well, the thing is, you know, rappers in general, and I think it's just part of the, I don't know if it's just kind of constantly feeling like somebody's coming for you in some cases, quite literally, but also just knowing that there's other rappers out there. Like, I mean, because, I mean, like rock music, I mean, yeah, you might have like Battle of the Bands, but there's no like, there's no competitive nature to rock music in the same way that there is in rap, like battling raps, rap MC, you know, MC rap battles, that type of thing. You know, that's ingrained in the DNA of rap. And so I think as a result, you know, a lot of times you'll hear rappers basically rap about how, you know, they got guys coming after them, coming after what they have, even if it's just a title, their spot on the list, that type of thing. So I think that hunger would always have a place regardless of how the album does, like, you know, but in terms of, yeah, if the album at that point had tanked and he's like, don't call it a comeback. And they're like, don't call it a never was, you know, whatever. I don't know. you know, I mean, and that's the problem, right? Is like, my favorite example, and this is terrible because these are people's careers, whatever. My favorite example of the irony of just album titling. Do you remember the song Supersonic by JJ Fad? Supersonic.
No, I've
S is for super. U is for unique. You don't remember that song? It was an old...
Oh, okay. Yeah. We just
it was an all-girl
yes.
rap group. Does, they had one single called Supersonic. They were not very good. Do you know what the name of their album is? Not
oh, God,
a Fad. I think that is the funniest thing, that you can name your album Not a Fad and be a one-hit wonder. And it's like, really, actually, totally a fad. Yeah, but no, I mean, I was actually kind of surprised when I was also preparing for the show and was like, oh, like Mamas and Knock You Out was like the fifth single. Like, I would have led with that. Like, why do you, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that would have seemed silly if they had released the other singles and then they all kind of clanged and then you're like, all right, well, but I guess they know what they're doing. Russell Simmons, he's a smart guy.
That's very true. I mean, and it all worked out. And I guess to some extent, for LL Cool J, he had to sort of bring that level of enthusiasm and pride and like you said, braggadocio to the album, to whether it's to keep up or to maintain what he had.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that because you know, rap was kind of at that moment, and I mean, and where his place in rap at that moment was a really weird spot. Like, I mean, you know, you've got, you know, NWA, you've got the kind of gangster rap on the rise, and he's not a gangster rapper. And the thing about rap, one of the things that's different from rock, like if you're a rock musician, you can sing about anything and nobody cares. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody cares. Like, I mean, Led Zeppelin, they used to sing about Lord of the Rings and all sorts of crazy stuff, and nobody cared because nobody is looking at them going, okay, well, did you really do that, Robert Plant? Did you? Did you really squeeze?
Did you really go to Mordor?
Squeeze that lemon until the juice ran down your – did you? Come on. Rap is very much based in kind of authenticity. So, you know, is very – you know, for rappers, in at least the rap that I listen to, like, I mean, you – it really doesn't – like, I think that's why, like, Eminem – in part was successful was because he wasn't projecting an image of somebody that he wasn't. I mean, even though he was a white guy and practicing a primarily African American art form, he didn't try to say, oh, I'm from the streets. I'm a thug. I dealt drugs or anything like that. He was very honest about who he was. And so that authenticity helps carry him a long way because you can hear it in his songs and everything just feels more real. And so, I mean, LL Cool J, he can't just because people are now rapping about selling drugs or what life was like in Compton. And now that's not to say that the African American experience in the Bronx was different from in Compton. I'm sure that the police were probably just as, you know, unenlightened in New York City at that point as they were in Los Angeles. But I mean, it was a different, I mean, if he had all of a sudden put out a record that's tried to sound like Straight Outta Compton, then he's going to seem like he's just trying to take away from, like, he's just trying to bite on whatever it is that they're doing. And so, you know, he's got to stick to his roots. He's got to stick to the type of rapper that he was. And I mean, he, at that point, was still a very successful rapper. Like, he had sold millions of records. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's got to bring to his album who LL Cool J is, but yet who LL Cool J is not necessarily at that point in time where rap was going. It's amazing to me the album is as good as it is. And I personally feel like it's timeless. Like, I still listen to it, and I'm just like, yeah, it's just a really good record. You know, there's certain rap albums that I may have been really into, and I listen to them now, and I'm like, I'm not so sure. But this one, to me, it all just works.
Yeah, I think his style of rap, too, is it just naturally, I think it lends itself a little bit better to being timeless, because it's not necessarily about – it's about an emotion, it's about a feeling, it's about an attitude, which isn't the same as, say, if I wrote a song about, you know, what's going on in the community right now, because what's going on in the community is important now, but will not necessarily be important in 20, 30 years.
Well,
it might
unfortunately,
be,
we
but
find
it might
that
just
with
be,
a lot of times going on in African-American communities doesn't change.
Yeah, it is sad. It's a kind of the same theme, and you sort of wish it were more, let's rap about how things have improved, and, you know, the schools have gotten better.
No, you're right, though. But, I mean, what was I going to say? Like, you know, sometimes, like, it's funny. I was watching documentaries on hip-hop and stuff, and they were talking about Vanilla Ice. Mm. And, you know, he said, like, I mean, he actually had a he had been rapping for, like, 2-3 years. He had a pretty decent following in Dallas before he got signed. But, again, he's saying, oh, yeah, I'm from the streets and all this stuff. And, I mean, people know whether or not that's real and whether or not it isn't. And there's nothing wrong with just being true to who you are and just, you know, kind of banking on your talents as opposed to trying to come up with a persona that isn't necessarily real. Now, mind you, I mean, there are rappers out there that have personas that aren't – I mean, they're inflated. They might be – I mean, there's some truth to what they're talking about, maybe not as much as what they're talking about. You know, it's like kind of an inflated version of the truth. But there's still a nugget of truth there. I don't know. I think a lot about rap, and I don't really know much about it. I mean, I know stuff about it. A lot of it's just my own half-baked opinions. So I don't listen to anything I say. It's all just...
It's fine. I kind of only decided we should do some hip hop songs because I had a friend who wanted to do some, and I know that you'd wanted to do hip hop. And I said, you know what? I need to expand my horizons because I've been fortunate that this hasn't become the, like, hey, it's the mid early 90s show, because that's all I really know how to talk about. So, you know, any theory is 100% more than I have ever put out. In terms of the genre, I'm like, oh, that's rhymes. I like that. Or, oh, that's about shooting people. I don't know about those. That's not good.
Well,
for
it's
children.
Funny now. Like my kids are 11 and 13, and I'm totally like, yeah, I'm just playing whatever. Like I mean, I don't play whatever. Like I try to tone it, but I was like listening to Wu-Tang Clan yesterday when I was making dinner, and I was like, you know what? I don't even care if my daughter comes back down. I'm gonna be like, yeah, don't say that. You know, that's just basically it. I'm not.
Ain't nothing to sleep with. Oh yeah.
My favorite thing about Wu-Tang Clan is the Dave Chappelle skit for the racial draft. The Chinese pick the Wu-Tang Clan. I love that. The RZA. Anyway, a little aside. But yeah, I mean, and that's funny. It's weird how, like, when I was, you know, when I first had kids and I was like, okay, well, I can listen to rap, but I got to really specific about what it is and be really careful. And now I'm just like, I mean, I've talked to them and I'm like, you know, not swear, right? They're like, yep, I got it. And I'm like, all right, we're good. Now I do need to have a conversation with them about the N word, because that was something I never thought about. I was like, well, wait a minute, that's different. That's, I mean, they may not know that word to know that it's a swear. So we're going to have a little chat about that.
Well, and that would be one of those things that you sort of, you know, in one way, you'd be like, they're saying the N-word proudly because they don't know it, because they don't think that way about race. And isn't that great? But I don't think everyone else would necessarily agree that it's some sort of a moment of clarity of like, look, we're past words.
No,
this horrible racism. The kids today, they don't even think about it because they're so enlightened, unlike us.
No.
I don't think we're quite there yet. Maybe another generation or two, and that'll just be, oh, that's a word they used in old rap songs. I don't know what it means because it has no meaning anymore.
Exactly.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Just like those raps about great schooling and, you know, how no one does drugs anymore.
Well, I mean, I live in the South, so, you know, I'm always, you know, you definitely want, you know, it's definitely, I mean, anywhere you live, you want to make sure that your kids know what's going on in that regard. But that's one thing I thought about.
Yeah. And
it was just the other day. I was like, yeah, no, it's cool. They can hear this stuff. And then I was like, wait a minute. Like, okay, we still need to.
Yeah, that's the thing I found I don't love about now. My oldest son is getting to be older. He's you know, he's only 8. He's younger than your kids. But suddenly thinking about how much I need to talk about that I have no interest in talking about. Like, I forget we got to talk about sex at some point. I forget why, but we were somewhere where it suddenly came up, and not in like a lascivious way, like, whoops, this is an R-rated movie, we shouldn't have gone to this. Just like someone was naturally at like a museum or somewhere you wouldn't expect that to come up. It sort of popped up, and I thought, oh God, I'm going to have to talk about this pretty soon because it's going to be inescapable quickly. And I don't want to talk about any of those.
Yeah, for me, it was when my son, right before he started middle school, and for here in middle school, I thought I could get an extra year out of it. Middle school is sixth grade. So my wife was like, he's going to middle school, you need to have a talk. And I was like, ugh, okay. So I sat my son down, and I was like, all right, here it is. And he was shell-shocked, of course. And I was like, great, I did my job.
Yeah. There's always some jerk who ruins it for the rest of us parents. Like, just nobody's going to talk about it. Nobody talk about it. Then there's that jerk kid who's like, I know all about it. I'm going to tell you wrong information, and you'll be saying terrible things to your parents. Like,
well, that's exactly what we were trying to avoid, was like, all right, well, let's not have it. Let's not have this be something that he learns on the streets, you know? Yeah, exactly.
Put a rap song
about
the birds. Please, you probably
got something here.
I got an album here. You listen to this.
You listen to Two Live Crews, will do you up just right.
Yeah. Well, so Brandon, I think you've explained very well why Mama Said Knock You Out is your song. So now comes the hard
pitch.
Question. Why should it be our song?
So Mama Said Knock You Out should be our song because it never fails to get you pumped up for whatever it is you have to do, whether it's if you have to give a business presentation or you need to clean the bathrooms, whatever task that you have ahead of you, if the words, the background vocals, just the beat, you will, after hearing this song, feel like whatever task you have ahead of you, there is no option but complete and unmitigated success.
Wow. That is very well said, sir. Very well said.
If only it rhymed.
All right. Well, I mean, whoopee.
I apologize for you.
Well, everyone at home,
levels because my braying loud.
Oh, I can't hear very well how I'm coming in. So for all I know, I'm like, I can't tell. I'll record it later. Be like, ooh. I think the last episode I did, I feel bad for my guest because I had it set on whatever I'd had for the last recording, and it was sort of the, like, just record my sound so I can barely hear. I always feel so – I feel so crappy. It's like, oh, I didn't want to just hear myself. It's really not the point of the show. But in any case, everyone at home, I hope what you all consider Mama Said Knock You Out to be our song.
Yay.
Aww. It is. I'm going to listen to it next time I clean the bathroom. That is a very good way to think about it. You know, I can almost just start kind of swaggering just with that.
You snapping the gloves on.
Here I come with my gloves. I got my Clorox spray. I'm ready to go.
Like, damage. Damage.
I'm going to clean your toilet.
Your wife walks in. She just slowly backs away.
Whatever.
Hey, she doesn't care, right?
Whatever. Whatever.
I should have thought of this years ago.
Well, Brandon, thank you so very much for coming on the show and talking about this song. So like you were saying earlier, if folks want to hear more of your melodious tones and long last name, they could check out Jumping the Shark. Is it it's Jumping the Shark?
No, gosh, no. God forbid we actually reorganize. It's actually it's on iTunes, but I think you can go to gameshark.libsyn, libsyn.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter, Mr_Binky. So that's MISTER_BINKY. And you can hear me complain about all sorts of wonderful things like everybody else on Twitter.
I try not to complain too much on Twitter myself, but it is really hard not to. It's like, this sucks. I'm watching something. This NCIS episode
is
no good. Or it's the best one. I love this battery acid eyeball case they're working on.
That's right.
Thing. NCIS.
You know, just one more thing about that real quick. My wife hates the episodes where they focus on side characters, and I make her watch all of them because I'm a horrible human being.
There are side characters on that show?
Yeah.
I always thought the format was like, hey, let's talk about our characters for 2 minutes.
Well,
anyway, that's enough of that.
They do that, but when you're in like season 13, the writers are like, ugh, what are we going to do now? Okay, you. Who are you? Lab Tech 4? All right, you're up.
You get your own episode now. Oh, man, I didn't know there was any serial storytelling whatsoever in those shows.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It kind of makes me want to watch them, but not enough to find out where to stream CBS. Nope, I'm sorry. It's too hard. I got to go find cable or an antenna or something old you to watch CBS. Well, Brandon, thanks again for being on. Looking forward to hearing more about Ratchet and Clank, maybe the Lost Quantum Break episode someday, so I don't have to play it. The more I don't have to play, the better. My wife wishes I would also not buy the games, but sorry, no, it's a collection. I have to have them. Just not going to play them. Hope everyone enjoyed the episode. Again, you can follow me as well on Twitter at @playing_our_song. You can go to the website, playingoursong.net, follow us on Facebook. If you have a song that you want to talk about or you want to share, you can email me at rob@playingoursong.net. You follow us on iTunes or find us on iTunes at, you know, They're Playing Our Song, you know, close to Brandon's. You can search us both, subscribe to both. So Hip Hop Month will continue. I think I actually have four people lined up to talk hip hop, which is exciting because I know nothing about it, so I can sort of just coast on their knowledge, which is my favorite.
I'm really excited
kind of
to hear the Crazy Bone episode.
Oh yeah, that's when did that go out?
Oh, that came out.
I've been unplugged. It was just on Wednesday. It was just on Wednesday, so it's not really old.
Did you talk about Riding with Chameleonaire?
Oh, I don't think we did.
He spit such a great verse on that song. They see me rolling, they hate it. Sorry.
I only know the Weird Al version because that's what I know. The Weird Al version of rap songs is really
my wheelhouse.
It's
one of my favorite rap songs. One of my absolute favorites.
Well, we'll do a Weird Al month at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, you get a lot of mileage out of that, absolutely.
Well, everyone at home, thanks for listening. Brandon, thanks again for being on the show. Look forward to having you again. I know you said that you really need more shows, so you are now legally responsible for being on more episodes, as I tell all my guests who, sadly, you know, they're like, oh, no, I got trapped. You know, it's like that movie Entrapment with Captain Zeta-Jones. You know, I tricked you. Aha!
I'm actually slinking under lasers right now.
That's a visual for everyone at home. All right. For everyone at home, thanks for listening. Join us next week. But until then, remember, it's your song, so play it long and play it loud. Bye. We all need together.